And our first speaker is Paul Bedritsky, and he is the public health director at the City of Milwaukee Health Department. And he is going to be giving a talk confronting social determinants of emergency preparedness. And so thank you for getting us started this morning.
Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. And it was brief. Can everyone hear me okay? So they know me at work as Paul B. for obvious reasons, because you look at the name Biedritsky and everyone gets confused with all the consonants. So today I'd like to briefly present, very briefly, I put some slides that really present a framework that I developed while sitting on FEMA's National Advisory Council over the last 3 years. And it was a great honor. I was the first local public health rep on that National Advisory Committee, a FACA, that was formed back in 2007 as part of post-Katrina, to really advise the administrator being Craig Fugate, on everything emergency management. And sitting in those discussions with a lot of emergency managers, it became very apparent to me that this issue of achieving community resiliency, which is kind of the new buzzword for FEMA and many emergency management organizations to say, this ability for a community to rapidly recover in an expedited way, to weather and withstand a catastrophic event, is really kind of a key strategic initiative for FEMA. And it occurred to me that perhaps we could apply the public health model of social determinants, you know, income, race, education, that model, and better understanding what makes a community resilient, as well as engaging public health or the public health model of community engagement, leveraging networks within the community, informal leadership, in a way that would allow FEMA and emergency managers a deeper understanding of community dynamics. So I used to think of this on the plane rides back into Washington, put together with my colleague, Ms. Risa Colton, who now works for our county executive. She was our former associate director of health equity, put together this just brief framework that I hope you'll find intriguing that really promotes this idea of social determinants of community preparedness in achieving community resiliency. So I'm going to, that's kind of the background of how I came across this. I have no financial disclosures or conflicts of interest to report. A little bit about Milwaukee, where I'm from. It's a small suburb north of Chicago. Is that, I mean, it's about 600,000 people in the city proper, similar to Boston. A metropolitan area, maybe about 1.82 million people. It's a great place on a great lake, although our mayor calls it a fresh coast city, because we've really developed an epicenter, almost have you, of freshwater industry, technology, and research that we're pretty proud of, too. It's the home of many corporate entities, as you can see there as well. So come and visit. And that's the beautiful Calatrava Art Museum, right out located or perched on the lakefront. So here's my, just as an opening, right now, from my perch and my perspective, I see this emergency management model as kind of a one-sided equation for a number of reasons. It's primarily a government responsibility, federal, state, and local, through emergency management organizations. It has a very prescribed planning approach, giving templates and guidance, almost checklists on what communities can do to prepare. There's a lot of siloed federal agencies. I saw that clearly sitting on the National Advisory Council. You know, you have EPA, you have Department of Homeland Security, you have FEMA within Homeland Security, you have CDC. Everyone's kind of doing their preparedness thing, and there's a lot of silos. It might be a function of any bureaucracy. I don't see much public involvement. I see people like me invited to the table, but I don't see a lot of grassroots public involvement. It's very response-centric. It's all about that first 8-hour operational period, you know, preparedness and response, little talk about recovery mitigation, much less resiliency, and it focuses on the short term and not the long term. Again, think hours and days, not weeks and months, which are inherent in any type of community recovery and resiliency in a mass catastrophic event. Other challenges, government can't be all things to all people. Craig Fugate used to tell us routinely about the maximum of preparing for the maximum of maximum disasters. And he used the example of like a magnitude 9 earthquake in Memphis, Tennessee, that would just take out lots of infrastructure, result in tens of thousands of deaths and hundreds of thousands of casualties. And how could government respond in the first 24 to 72 hours to that type of event? It will rely on good community preparedness, good community resiliency. Mega catastrophes, think hurricanes, tornadic activities, floods, Fukushima, Daiichi, the trifecta, are becoming more common, it appears. Society is certainly more complex and communities are unique. I believe that a one-size planning model, however you describe it, all hazards or federally mandated, does not fit all communities. Other problems, I think many of you who work in government, resources are dwindling. A lot of public complacency about planning for a low probability, high consequence event. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, public, it really, there's a lot on their plate, mostly economically these days, really not interested in packing a lot of water and batteries and food for months. I mean, there's other things, again, of a more urgent nature. I don't think emergency planning is particularly grounded in reality. I think, again, just the nature of the beast in contemporary government. And I don't think there is really a good engagement by the government with our communities. I think we talk about engagement, but I don't think there really is good engagement. So some examples, just so I can put it in perspective, this is the kind of stuff I think about. You look at Katrina, which is kind of the poster child for this. Lots of health disparities and poverty-related issues that really were predictable surprises when it came to planning, but failed to be addressed and resulted in really inefficient response and recovery across the board. The 2009 pandemic, I know in Milwaukee we saw very low vaccination rates, especially among African American communities, primarily related to access to health care, but also a distrust of government. We had very low vaccination rates and attendance at our clinics, give about 30,000 vaccinations in a few weeks, and less than 5% of those were in the African American community. The BP Gulf oil spill, you should look at the New England Journal of Medicine article that shows, again, the aftermath and recovery with a community that was heavily reliant on Gulf fishing, with a lot of high school educated workforce that were unemployed, and all of a sudden you saw an increase in psychosomatic illness among those at home and an increase in domestic abuse. That was probably always there, but now you have the abusers at home a lot more than they were before. I mean, things we can think about if we look at the community a little deeper. Hurricane Sandy, this was said, and a lot of lessons learned on Hurricane Sandy, the two biggest ones were they were preparing for the wind, they got the surge, couldn't deal with vertical density populations. When the power went out, how do you get to the 40th floor? You're not going to run up 40 flights of stairs. EMS, fire departments, or first responders, big problems with vertical density, and then understanding fuel distribution and energy grid on that sector. I mean, they were without power for weeks. In a fairly heavily populated modern city, they were without power for weeks. So there wasn't really a plan B, or maybe not a plan C or D. So if you know this policy directive, this is what FEMA circles around these days. It was released about 2 years ago. It's known as the preparedness goal. It talks about all hazards preparedness. It talks about the shared responsibility of private, nonprofit, and government, and reinforces that everyone can contribute, including this. Some of you have heard of whole of community approach or whole community approach. This really relates to the fact that if there was a maximum event, that government response would be limited. Don't rely on the government being there immediately. Maybe your neighbors, maybe your family, maybe yourself, but not the government. The private sector owns 90% of the resources, but they're not integrated in 90% of the response and recovery efforts. That's kind of a problem. Why? Are we making that a win-win scenario? Are we incentivizing involvement? Why aren't they at the EOC? Why aren't they part of incident command? Why aren't they part of the planning exercises? Craig Fugate used to like to talk about economic continuity. If you get Target and Walmart up as soon as possible, you're doing the most you can for that community outside of any other health, social, economic recovery effort. Get Walmart and Target going. You put people to work. You get economic continuity going. You get community resiliency achieved. And again, something that the government recognizes, but as yet to solve, community resilience is best accomplished by the community, not prescribed by the government. So what are the social determinants? I'm quoting myself because I just came up with this about 24 hours ago. This is kind of what I'm talking about. This is the P.A. Biedrzycki framework. Root factors inherent and characteristic to community, you know, the community dynamic that can be incorporated into a whole of community planning dialogue or approach that FEMA advocates, that mitigate not only the health impacts and health disparities, but economic and social impacts associated with the disaster. So what are those? These are kind of my short list of things that I think emergency management needs and emergency planners, emergency preparedness coordinators need to start looking at. And these aren't things we aren't looking at. You need to look at per capita income, unemployment rates, housing density, homeless populations, how about high school graduation rates in the community as part of your preparedness paradigm? Certainly look at health disparities. We're starting to do that now. We call that vulnerable or functional population planning. We're looking at health disparities. Community crime rates, I think, are important in preparedness as well as recovery and resiliency. Social capital, the cohesiveness of a community, the extent of its networks, I think are absolutely critical for the emergency manager to understand economic growth, public health system, civic infrastructure, civic mindedness. I think these are variables and determinants that aren't considered, at least not comprehensively, in current emergency management models. So my value proposition is, if you confront these, you will get better community resiliency. It can't hurt, it may help. Maybe I should put that. It can't hurt, it may help. How can this help? Deeper understanding of community dynamics, which often and helps identify these key and invisible vulnerabilities, especially around economic and social dynamics within a community, so areas that need to be reinforced. It forces engagement of whole of community, so you're just not talking about it, you're walking the talk of whole of community involvement by dealing with those social determinants. You can successfully leverage existing networks and resources that aren't being done now, especially with the private sector, and communities are unique and in the best position to describe the critical nodes, so that community engagement and involvement is very, very critical. It's a deeper and better engagement with the community. So here, in the last couple of slides, the way forward. Again, for people involved in emergency preparedness and community response, recovery, mitigation efforts, examining economic, social, and public health and political profiles of a community, meaning mapping these economic indicators, however you want to map those, either through GIS or some other tool or model that helps elucidate or illuminate these types of vulnerabilities and disparities pre-event. The dialogue with the private sector is absolutely critical, not just Target and Walmart, but the private sector, the small and medium businesses that make up your community. We kind of do that now with our points of dispensing and pandemic planning a little, but I think we could do a better job. Inviting new partners to the EOC and preparedness exercise, hard to do because those exercises are usually time constrained and usually are kind of scripted in a way that really is exclusive of non-traditional stakeholders, I believe. And identifying and engaging informal community leadership within, and that could be chambers of commerce. We talk a lot about faith-based organizations. I think they're well on their way. Philanthropic agencies, others, that really are the informal leadership, not the clearly identified leadership in the community, I think would be important. So some final thoughts that kind of support that value proposition. Government clearly does not have the capacity or capability to respond to a single, much less multiple, spontaneous, simultaneous, maximum of maximum events. So you can have that earthquake in Memphis, and you can have a bioterrorism attack in New York, and then you can have, I don't know, a tsunami in Hawaii. That's going to be, I mean, could that occur? I get conceivably plausible, absolutely, highly probable, probably not. But then Fukushima Daiichi was kind of an interesting case study as well. You know, tsunami, earthquake, tsunami, nuclear reactor meltdown, and we're still feeling those effects globally. Not even in that sector, globally. And it's more than radioactive tuna, by the way. Communities are unique in their organization, social capital, demographics, etc. Therefore, resiliency factor will be equally unique. One size will not fit all. It cannot be prescribed by government, nor should it be. And then finally, I really support, I'm sure many of you do, early and frequent engagement of the whole community to achieve resiliency. So, you know, the federal government talks about resiliency. They want to strengthen it. They want to measure it. They want to sustain it. We're kind of on that upward learning curve, but there's room for everyone at the table, a lot of dialogue, how we get there. But I hear a lot about community resiliency, but I don't see a lot of action. Maybe dealing with some of these upstream social determinants might get us a little closer to achieving that. This is from Katrina. It's about the whole community. Thank you.
Great efficiency, which means we have time for a couple of questions. We're trying to save some time at the end for discussion. Yeah.
I just want to comment. In our community, we tried to use the CMIS model, which is a way of talking about access and functional needs, to look across our community for diversity to engage non-traditional partners. And we were so excited because we got them to come to the table once. Mm. And that was it. And they haven't been back. And we've tried a lot of varieties of how do you get them re-engaged or continuously engaged. So I would suggest you need to get real creative, because the model that we, whoever we is, would use, come to the meeting you know, that a meeting around the table in a government building, that might not be it. You might have to have the meeting in the church basement on potluck night. It just might have to be a lot of different ways of reaching out as an emergency planner.
Yeah, that's a great point. I just want to say any successful collaboration, you have to create that win-win scenario. And that means the burden's on us to be very flexible and adaptable, getting out of our box, they say, to really meet those needs. But it's not easy, you're right. And the win-win scenario is the way to do it, but how do you achieve the win-win? You have to understand what's a win for the other party.
That's